Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, the Clippers are in the middle of beating or on their way to beating the crap out of the Mavericks in the way that the Lakers beat the crap out of the Blazers the other night. And wouldn't you know, Paul George is right back on track. You know, it's just it's nice when the team comes out and punches them in the mouth for you, and then you get to kind of pile on over the course of that game.
Oh, he played well from the beginning of the game.
He's given
folks plenty of material before tonight. He was good tonight.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's at the end of the day. He's really, really good. And,
right.
You know, he's going to play really, really well eventually. And this was the night where all of the Clippers had it going. You and I waited to see how this game went before we started recording our show here. Kind of a big night here in the NBA because Utah and Denver winds up winning to extend that series. It is now 3-2 in that one. The Clippers, like I said, are well on their way to, is it evening the series here? It's not.
Or no, 3-2.
3-2. 3-2 lead here for the Clippers. So that's a big deal for them. And just in general, you know, more the longer this first round goes, and the more rest the Lakers could possibly get compared to not only their opponent in the very next round, but those teams that they might see eventually down the road, that winds up, given how closely matched all these teams are, that's a big deal in this postseason.
Yeah, the more time to prepare, the more time to rest. We talked a lot about the unusual ramp up and that each team would have to do. And it's funny, kind of the best teams in the NBA have been thought to be thus far the Lakers, Clippers, and Bucks. And each of them have followed a similar arc, right? The Clippers have taken a little longer to get it going, but all three were not great in the seeding games, started off slow in the first game or two, and have picked it up since then. You know, I think the Clippers are facing the best player of all three with, you know, respect to, mm-hmm. to Damian Lillard. Just Doncic at 6'7" you know, it's just a different animal. But they trapped him tonight for the first time really in the series, and that was really successful for them. So I'm sure we'll see that more in game six. But from a Lakers perspective, I loved the game plan that we've had for the Portland Trailblazers. So the more time that we get to zeroing in on two teams right now, and maybe with a distant eye to a Clippers series in the conference finals. But the more time we get to prepare and rest, I think we had our ramp up in this series. And like, you don't play defense like that unless you're really on the same page and you're really locked in. And focus was a big concern of mine going into these games, and they've really answered that. So yeah, the longer it takes, the better, in my opinion.
I think a lot of people might actually mock Charles Barkley for this take, but as he was saying it, like, it's not the kind of thing you can really prove or whatever, but he was talking about how he thinks there's a correlation between the Lakers going out and beating the Blazers the way that they did last night between that and the Clippers going out and really taking care of business, especially early against Dallas. And it's the kind of thing that, like, you know, people who probably didn't play in the NBA are probably going to say, oh, come on, there can't be that much of a correlation. But he spoke specifically to there is a team, or sometimes there are teams that heading into the postseason, they know they're going to see each other. And because of that, they are going to watch what the other team is doing. And so for the Clippers, you know, given the way they had played in this series against Dallas, they saw the Lakers go out and play as well as they did. And they're saying, yeah, we can't, you know, just kind of trudge through the postseason and then show up and try to beat a Lakers team that might be playing that the way that they played the other night. And I, you know, this is where I just got to, you know, kind of shut up and get out of the way and actually kind of agree here with Charles's point. Of course the Clippers and Lakers are watching each other. And of course that, now whether or not they can execute it is another thing altogether. But of course they really came out, and especially seeing as the adjustment was, let's go out and trap, because usually trapping that kind of more aggressive defense, that requires a little extra commitment. And if the Clippers were sitting there watching the Lakers and they walk into this one and they say, all right, guys, this is enough of this. You know, Luka's a very good player, but we are actually one of the better equipped teams to deal with him in this postseason. Let's actually go out and show it. I actually have to agree with Chuck here.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be keeping an eye on each other and they're going to be responding to each other. I do think, though, that the Clippers are not coming off of an NBA title or any other reason to not build continuity. Like, one of the things, you know, from a coach's perspective that you learn very quickly is it's not about the other team. Now, of course, you need to match up and scheme and all of that good stuff. But if you focus on, are we making our rotations? Is everybody locked in? Are we doing because like every defensive play, especially, I'm really focused on defense right now, especially with these two teams. Every possession is like, all right, close out. Then this guy rotates over. This guy helps the helper, weak side guy, defense two. And then if they skip it, this is the rotation. But it's always like a sequence of events. That's how defense works, right? And if you're doing it well, I remember, you know, on the high school level, my goal was always to get like pressure at the point of attack, the help defender to rotate over, and then to help the helper. And the basketball gods, nine out of 10 times, would bless me with a missed shot or a turnover or something. Like, if we did those three things, then it would work out for us on that possession almost invariably. The NBA is more sophisticated and you got to do more things and it's faster and all of that. But there's a level of coordination to defense, is my basic point, that it's not like a turn the switch on and off unless you're like a Warriors team that's done it before. Right.
Yeah.
And your team, and that's why teams like Boston and teams like Toronto that do it every single night, that are making their rotations in every single game, they're the Clippers, it will be difficult for them or anyone else to be successful at the highest levels of this postseason without changing the focus from like, oh, well, now we got to take it seriously because the Lakers blew them out, or the Mavericks tied it up at two when they weren't supposed to. And so now we're really going to show how much more talented we are. That's a dangerous game to play in terms of the cohesion of your defense.
Yeah, especially because the Clippers don't have much cohesion. Like they haven't played much. Like not just in the context of ever having played together, because this is like basically a brand new team, but also in the context of, with that as your starting point, they haven't really played much together this year. So thinking that on any given night, and now it might not come up and bite them, because neither Utah or Denver really look like world beaters to me. Though Donovan Mitchell is as impressive as it gets over the course of a first round series. Maybe it might not bite them then, but if they go into a series against the Lakers or maybe eventually against Houston, thinking that, yeah, we just have to turn it on whenever we have to turn it on without that much experience under their belts, that's a good way to lose, man. That's tempting the basketball gods.
And like I said, it's about you as a team, right? It's not about like, oh, will Denver or Utah beat us if we take a game or two off? Like, it's not really the point. It's that the habits that you build up and the continuity, you want defense especially to be a second nature type of thing. Like, the ball's right here and it gets skipped to the corner. I know exactly where I'm going. There's no even split second of like, do I help on the big or do I close out to the wing? There's none of that, right? And it involves trust.
Like your waiters, you just stand there with your hands up like this. I'm not gonna get you fired.
Yeah, no, I can't. You need our boy Dion did a 360 on a closeout yesterday. I did see that. He did a little spin.
It was garbage laugh, time. That wasn't even at me. You just saw a really funny joke online.
That was just
sure. Let's take a quick second. So the way today's show is going to go, because this is one of those rare moments in the postseason where there really isn't that much that is now left unsaid between the Lakers and the Blazers, as the Lakers hopefully get ready to close this one out. We'll kind of preview that game in the third segment. But it's been a while since Pete and I answered some questions together, or at least Pete answered a few of your guys' iTunes mailbag questions. So let's take a quick second. When we come back, we'll answer a few of those questions. And then to close out the show, Pete and I will kind of look ahead to hopefully the final game of this first round series. One quick thing, and I know this is going to sound like Laker fan who would prefer to see the Mavericks win over the Clippers in this first round, whatever. This is actually more of like an old man point on my part. And like, the Mavericks aren't doing Kristaps Porzingis any favors by just saying he's out with knee soreness. You know, because they did this earlier on this year, and I was talking to my buddy Kirk about this before I brought it up on our show, because I didn't want to sound completely uneducated on it. But they did the same thing with Kristaps, where he went a little while kind of sitting out, or, you know, not looking 100% or whatever. And the Mavericks basically went that entire stretch saying, it's knee soreness, without ever really getting into any detail as to when the injury occurred, if it actually is an injury, what might be going on there. And you can do that in the regular season, because the line in the regular season is always, well, if it was a playoff game, he would be out there, but we just wanted to be cautious on this one. This is a game five, man. Like, this is a game five in a series that you could very well kind of sneak away with. And I just don't think you're doing your guy any favors without offering up any kind of clarity on if it is an actual injury and Kristaps isn't good to go, then everybody understands that, you know. But just saying, yeah, he's a little sore, he's not going to be good to go today, The old man in me, and especially coming off of like Mamba week or whatever it is, like, could you imagine Kobe's face if the trainer said, hey, is your knee a little sore? You should not go on this playoff game. Like, he would have murdered somebody before he sat out a game with just soreness. If it's an actual injury that's keeping you out, then fine. But I just think in general, teams, like, you got to be forthcoming on this stuff. You got to, you know, you're not, you feel like you might feel like you're protecting your guy with the lack of clarity. But the number one rule in PR is you got to tell your story, or else other people are going to tell it for you. And in this one, you just got to say, is Kristaps dealing with a sprained knee? If he's dealing with a sprained knee, nobody's expecting him to go out there.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, that's a topic I can't really touch too much, player injury on another team.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'll rant about it forever.
Sure.
Just because it's just I feel bad for Kristaps, because I'm sure there are plenty of Mavs fans out there who are like, "What? Where is this guy? How are you sitting out with soreness?" And the Mavericks could just say he sprained his knee, he's not available, and the story would be over. But instead, you're going to get stuff like that. Anyway, moving on, we'll go ahead and dive into the questions here. The first question here was a comparison kind of question between JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard, and how we've been kind of hard on JaVale McGee, but has Dwight Howard been that much better? I think I want to tweak that a little bit, and given how good the first unit looked in game four, do you think this is something that, you know, they should just stick with the starting lineup from here on out, or is that still something you know Frank Vogel should maybe keep in the back of his head?
I was impressed by how well our traditional fives, both JaVale and Dwight, showed at the level of the ball screen in this series how well they defended the perimeter. There weren't a lot of plays where Dame was blowing by them and getting to the rim. And if they did come up high, we were having guys rotate on the back end. So how translatable is that to a series against Chris Paul? Probably pretty translatable. It's less translatable to a Houston series where they run ISOs more than ball screens. And they're looking to attack one-on-one. And that those are situations where part of why JaVale and Dwight, you know, are effective in a series like this is because you've got traditional bigs on the other side of the court. Mm-hmm. I do think that Dwight has been better than JaVale in this series. JaVale has also contributed over the last couple of games, right? Like he's brought something to the table. He was fantastic in the last game. But I think Dwight's physicality, I think at some point in game four, Portland, we became a very exhausting team to play. And I think
you saw
Dwight's
poor Wynion Gabriel as like garbage time kind of came to a close. Poor Gabriel was like, come on, man, this guy has me by 50 pounds.
Mm-hmm. And this is my fourth game of dealing with that. Right.
This feels awful.
I think Dwight really contributes to the wearing down over the course of a series, right? We're talking about game five as though it's some foregone conclusion, got Dame out, right? But the way that game four went, like we really asserted our will against a team that didn't push back as much, right, as they were at the beginning of the series. And I think that the physicality of Dwight has a lot to do with that.
Yeah, I just think with Dwight specifically, I think he's better. I mean, for one thing, he's just a better player at this stage of both his and JaVale's career and over the course of both of their careers. Dwight has always been a better player than JaVale. More specifically, I think Dwight is, because of that, better equipped to take advantage of the things that you want to, that like the reason he's out there. So the physicality, getting on the offensive boards, the rim protection stuff, and without giving up too much on the perimeter defensively. Like I think Dwight is just better equipped to handle those things and be a net positive more often than JaVale. But that said, JaVale starting has gotten them to this point. I do think there is some value in the continuity and keeping JaVale invested, especially like the one thing that I've been thinking about a lot, especially on this topic specifically, is if you lose JaVale, it's not like you can kick him out of the bubble, right? So if he starts to sulk and you get any kind of negative impact from a chemistry standpoint, like I think that weighs on the team more than in normal circumstances where players could just kind of get away. They're with the team while they have to be. And then when they don't have to be, they can go back and they can hang with their family, their friends or whatever. In the bubble, everybody's just kind of forced to be together. And it's really, I feel like it would be a lot more noticeable in moments where if JaVale is sulking because he isn't playing or loses his spot altogether, if you lose JaVale altogether, that's a larger impact than in normal circumstances. So I think there's some value there in riding JaVale as long as possible, just so you don't lose him altogether.
I mean, and this was such an impressive defensive performance. It has been at least through four games in this first round. There's something to be said for, like, I would not foresee a change unless it didn't work. We'd have to be behind a little deeper in the series, I think, before that would start to be considered.
Yep. And as these series go along, you're working with lower, you know, smaller margins for error. And in those spots, like if it's such a glaring, the tough thing about the game one with the Blazers was that there was such a glaring issue that if the Lakers just make shots, the ratings for everybody go up. And now it's not the best matchup. JaVale isn't going to have great matchups really from now on in the postseason. But, you know, after game one of your first round series, in which you shoot 16% from 3-point range, if you bench JaVale after that, it feels a lot more like scapegoating than actually understanding why the Lakers lost that game.
Right. And it would be a departure from how we've approached anything thus far this year. So yeah. I think that, you know, this has been a hell of a series for us from a, like I said, from a defensive standpoint. There were two games that were enormously frustrating because of the shooting, but from a just game plan perspective, I think Vogel's got a good argument to make to keep doing what he's doing, even if that particular lineup doesn't work overall defensively. Like if we're playing defense this well and we have LeBron James and AD, and I feel really good, we've got a really high floor and a high ceiling, and there's probably no need to change until that changes.
Yep. Let's go one more question here without getting into any specifics, right? Cause we don't want to talk about players for other teams, but do you think in the bubble tensions will rise higher than in normal circumstances? Like over the course of a series, you're going to get chippiness. You're going to get a bunch of shit talking. You're going to get any number of things that are going to force emotions to rise a little higher and maybe more quickly than they would in a regular season type scenario. But given the bubble and the close proximity and the unrelenting proximity to not just teammates, but also and especially to opponents, that tensions might rise a little bit more quickly?
Yeah, for sure.
I think so too. But even with that said, I always kind of wonder how much a role the 17,000 screaming people play in in emotions getting as high as possible, right?
Sure.
So I want to say, like, it'd be fun, just because I enjoy that aspect of the game, but I tend to probably lean the other way, where not having so many random people screaming boo or you suck or whatever else gets yelled at players in that situation. Like, usually when, because it's not like, without getting kicked out of the series, it's not like a player who's getting yelled at stuff can walk over and punch a fan, right? But they can take it out on the person that they're playing against without as crazy a punishment. So with that kind of removed, with the fan element removed, I feel like cooler heads can prevail a little bit more easily. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there's also so many factors with them being in the same place for so long and this whole framework of really not too much to do but basketball. Whatever there is to do in the bubble aside from basketball, they have probably all done it by now. They've been there since when late July was it? July?
About a month.
Yeah, when they got there. Yeah. It's been longer than a month at this point.
Because we're going into September, so
right. The first scrimmages were in July 22nd, I think, and they got there early July. They got there early July. So it's been about a month and a half. And so I think there's all sorts of reasons for tensions to be high. And we've seen a little bit of chippiness in this Mavs Clippers series, couple other places, a couple dust ups in Denver, Utah, that I actually think this is more of an environment that's conducive to that than the factor of there not being any fans and it being easier to kind of squash things.
Yeah. We need virtual fans to bring signs with like insults of players and stuff. Although I doubt the NBA would allow that kind of thing.
Certainly not.
Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we are going to preview the Lakers game 5 against Portland, in which we hope that they knock the Blazers out. The importance of doing so, all of that good stuff here in a bit. Today's show is brought to you in part by rockauto.com. Pete, I have some news.
What's that?
I changed my own tire today.
Oh, congratulations. You feel manly?
Oh, I did, man. I walked in and I like used a dirty rag to like wipe my face. Cause I mean, out here, the thing is, it's like 95 degrees with 3 zillion% humidity.
No, thank you.
So I literally saw the sweat falling onto the ground, but I was doing that as Jen pulled up and she was like, "Hey, what were you doing?" And I said, "No biggie, just changed my tire." And she was like, "No way, come on." I go, "Yeah, I just changed my tire." And she said, "Can't lie, little extra attracted to you."
All right.
And I was like, I'll take whatever points I can get at this point. And this is the kind of thing that our listeners can do more often, that they could get, they could score those extra points by fixing their own car, unless they break their own car, in which case their significant others are not going to be thrilled. But Rock Auto does give you the opportunity to do whatever it is that you need to do to your car. They are going to give you great pricing no matter what your background is in fixing your car. And they have every part that you might need to fix it should that situation arise. So head on over to rockauto.com right now and check out all the parts available for your car or truck, and then write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Rockauto.com has amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. One more time, rockauto.com. I gotta say though, like actually fixing, because you know, obviously you got to do all the lug nuts and all that stuff. And once I was done with that, actually starting my car and turning out onto the road with this, I mean, it was a donut, so I'm
a little
already,
dicey.
Yeah, I'm already. You gotta go.
Oh. No, I'm good.
Okay,
I'm good.
I was already a little nervous. Because it's a donut on my car and it doesn't look that good. It looks like a bike tire there. But then the fact that it was me and knowing how bad I usually am with my hands, like I had images.
Didn't trust
of
it
me
too much.
Driving, yeah. Like there goes my car.
Rolling off.
Yeah. But I made it the mile up the road so to where the real experts can help me with my flattened tire.
Very nice.
Yeah, it was, but scoring the extra points is good. The last game here, Lakers will take on the Blazers. Well, hopefully it's the last game. Let's start there. Do you see, we talked earlier about the fatigue factor, you know, comparatively speaking, between the Lakers and whoever they play next, because they might be playing longer series here. But, you know, for the Lakers, beyond that factor, you don't want, like, I think Phil Jackson felt the same way. You just don't want to play with your food in the playoffs. Like, that's a great way to get bit.
Yeah, I mean, that they got to close it out. They got to look to game five as a great opportunity to get some time off, to get, prepared longer for the next series. And I think, like, their game plan has been simple but effective from a pushing the pace and transition standpoint. I think that game five is going to be a game where we need to look to run off of every made shot, off of every defensive rebound, every possible opportunity that we can to run. I think that's a team that's ready to break from a perspective of running the floor and doing all of the things that go into defensive cohesion. We saw some of that. You know, Lakers put up a .135 the other day. They were hot from as jump shooters, which no guarantee that's going to repeat itself in game five. But I do think that the basic principles of, you know, outclassing them athletically and pushing the pace is carried them to this point. And I think that'll, you know, game five is a good, that's something that gets better throughout a series rather than worse in terms of wearing a team down.
You don't think the Lakers are susceptible here to like letting their guard down too far because Dame isn't playing, do you?
It's possible for sure. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they start out 12-5 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Portland does. It's always whenever a team loses their main guy, you don't know entirely how to defend them as much. Now, that's, you know, we've got a game plan for CJ, and we kind of focus more of our attention on him. Trent can shoot, right? I'm sure Melo will get some more touches. But I don't think there's anybody entering the rotation or getting those shots from Dame that we haven't really game planned for in the first place. So there is obviously the possibility of them letting their guard down, not being as aggressive defensively. But this is a game, in my opinion, similar to game four, where if they put their foot on the gas pedal early, if they want rest, you know, build up a 30-point lead and get that in the fourth quarter. I think that, you know, conditions are primed for that to happen, but they have to take the game seriously first.
Yeah, I think, at the end of the day, if the Lakers get out in transition, there is just no way for their bigs to keep up with Dwight or JaVale, and let alone Anthony Davis. It's a tough matchup for them in various, like, not, it's one thing where one team has one advantage. Like when the Lakers and Clippers play, the Lakers are going to have an advantage with Anthony Davis because Zubats is too slow and Montrezl Harrell is too small. Right. But in other aspects of the game, the Clippers are going to have serious advantages, right? Where Kawhi is just too strong for KCP and for Danny Green, and he's too experienced for Kuz, and as such terrifies me. But in this one, especially now that Dame is out, it's really hard to find an advantage that the Blazers have here. You know, it's really difficult to find it. And you know, I could see, like you're saying, the letdown early, and I could see a really frustrating, you know, timeout about 4 minutes into the game where I'm screaming about, like, all right, change the starting lineup. I'm sick of JaVale, you know, whatever it might be. It's really, with all the talk of, you know, best eight seed ever, and it's not your typical eight seed and yada, yada, yada. This, as it's currently constituted, is one of the bigger, you know, one versus eight or any kind of Western Conference matchup, you know, talent gaps that you'll see in a little while. Now, maybe not in recent memory, because we were talking about like the Golden State Warriors when they had Kevin Durant and they were going up against eight seeds, you know, and stuff like that. But I just say, I think LeBron really understands we got to take care of business here. And given that he understands that, the Lakers tend to bring energy to match his. And I just see him taking care of business here and knocking out the Blazers. And if they don't, then that's a huge missed opportunity that I think the Lakers would really, you know, regret. Maybe not next series, maybe next series, but definitely moving forward when you're talking about, man, those every extra minute counts when you're going up against teams as good as the Clippers and as good as Milwaukee and as good as the Toronto Raptors.
Sure. And every day of preparation counts as well. Mm-hmm. So, this is a great opportunity for them to close it out, to be able to shift their focus onto that next series, watch more Houston tape, more OKC tape. And LeBron's teams are always, you know, he's got his eyes on that ultimate prize. And I was thinking today, like, when was the last time LeBron team lost to a team that was of comparable talent level in a playoff series, right? Because I feel like when they lost to the Warriors, like, those Warriors teams were way better than the Cavs. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They were a tier easily better than the Cavs. And it's just been a long time since LeBron has dropped a series to a team that was kind of a pick'em type of series. And I think part of that is the ability to prepare. It is his mental understanding of the game. And we talked about this a little bit, like all the kind of the brain trust on the team of everybody zeroing in on one team. I thought they picked apart the Blazers, and they need to give themselves the opportunity to do that again, right, in the second round by handling business in game five.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Last thing before we get out of here, Giannis Antetokounmpo wins the Defensive Player of the Year award, and you know, that scenario that we were talking about where Vogel, I still don't think they've given the actual award out. That was like the coaches union, that award or version of the award that they gave out previously with the tie between, I think it was Bud and Nurse, or no, Billy Donovan and Nurse. But now you have Giannis winning Defensive Player of the Year. This probably also means he's going to win MVP. But you know, it's just, it's kind of too bad that a season that saw such an uptick in wins and outperformed expectations, even with LeBron and Anthony Davis on the same roster, might go largely unaccounted for in the history of, or the retelling of that regular season. It's really a bummer.
I'm hoping that more and more time passes, the less importance we put into those awards. They're from who they're voted on by and the criteria for them, the playoffs not being accounted for. Like, that's what you play for, right? So the old idea of there being a regular season MVP is nice and swell, but it's not really what, like, LeBron isn't pacing himself to be the regular season MVP, and neither is Kawhi Leonard, or you know, the very best guys in the game aren't really shooting for that. And so, like, I don't think it matters that much. I like a finals MVP. That's the one where you had to be the baddest dude on your team when the stakes were the highest. I, as I get older, the more stock I put in finals MVPs, because that's ultimately what you play for. But again, those are still voted on in by people that maybe shouldn't be voting on them. And it's not a great metric. I hope we use it less and less.
Yeah. I think either we have to, you know, weigh them less in a historical context when we're talking about like the greatness of players and stuff like that, or we just have to get better at understanding what goes into the awards, like what we're looking for. Because in any given year, like, one of my least favorite kind of cliches when you're talking about MVP is if a player wins it the year prior and then comes back and they're better the next year, that winds up being good enough. Since Steve Nash, that winds up being good enough for back-to-back MVPs. And for me, it's like, okay, but the league might not have been as good in that first year that they won that first MVP. And then for some reason, if the player is better the third year, well, no, that doesn't really work as much because you get voter fatigue. Because when somebody winning an MVP 3 years in a row, well, that can't happen. And it's just, mm-hmm. it's just the voting every year is such a moving target. And like what I kind of go back to, if I were given a vote, I would say, where were we at with this player heading into this season? Where were we at with this team heading into this season? You know, what kind of margin for error was that player dealing with? What adversities was that player going to have to overcome to have the season that they eventually have? And I, yes, Milwaukee had the best defense, I believe, in the league. And Giannis plays a pivotal part of that defense, but it's also basically the same defense that they had last year. And the same thing is going to be said about his MVP, that it's the best team. It was the best team in the regular season by all of these metrics. And he is the best player on it. It's like, yeah, but it's, again, it's the same coach. It's a lot of the same players. It's a lot of the same principles. They just got better at them over the course of the season. And, you know, for where the Lakers were at and for where they were like heading into the year and the way that we thought of this team heading into it, where it was like, yeah, the Lakers have Anthony Davis and they have LeBron James, but look at those crappy role players that they wound up with because they waited out the Kawhi Leonard sweepstakes. And to go from that being the narrative, and I myself, that was a big chunk of my own analysis heading into the season, was like, okay, yeah, this is a really good team at the top of the roster, but there are some question marks throughout it. And oh, by the way, they have this coach who was like their third or fourth choice, depending on how you, what chain of events that you believe transpired before they eventually hired Frank Vogel. You go through all of that stuff to a team that also wasn't that far off from Milwaukee. Like by the time, and also given the direction that the Lakers were going in versus the direction that Milwaukee was going in when both teams hit the stoppage, it's, you know, the Lakers were climbing and they were closing this gap with Milwaukee in a way that it shouldn't be an automatic, like, yeah, Giannis just gets all the awards and Bud gets an award and whatever, even though I think Nurse is going to win the coach of the year or should. Like it's just the way that we look at these things is so imperfect. And it's something that like the people who vote on it actually kind of relish how imperfect the process is. Like it's this like weird thing where, they just say, yep, this is just how the voting goes. And you look at some of the people who actually have votes compared to people who don't, and some of the votes that go out because the people who have those votes aren't very good at voting. Like just the whole process sucks. And like you're saying, so long as the process remains as shitty as it is, I do hope that at some point we redo the math on what this stuff, like how much this stuff matters.
Like how much do we care about it? Yeah.
Yeah. Either that, I would prefer though, like either we don't care about it as much, which I don't think is ever going to happen because of the habits that we've formed and the amount that we care about it. So if we're always going to care about them that much more, let's actually go back to the drawing table and actually figure out the best way to vote on this stuff. You know, let's chart some of these people's votes over the years and figure out where their heads were at on that stuff. So, cause there are like objectively bad votes that go out in this thing, you know, where Andre Drummond is getting a vote for defensive player of the year or first team all defense and stuff. And it's just because he blocked shots and rebound. And like, that's not really how all of defense works. That's an insane oversimplification. And then the other side of it is where we're saying, well, according to this and this and this metric, the Lakers were better with Anthony Davis off the floor defensively than they were with him on it. It's like, that's where we're overthinking the path to defense because we can't rely on metrics. Like if a metric is telling you that Anthony Davis isn't a good defender, that's a shitty metric, or you suck at reading the metric. So,
right. I mean, yeah, so much of stats like need to be contextualized. Like why did the stat happen that way? What goes into that stat? What, you know, especially defensively, right? Like in a lot of ways, Anthony Davis being a basically net neutral, net rating guy is because he was carrying like really bad defensive units, you know, yeah, and making them average and making them, you know, and, so yeah, that's something that, you know, it's going to come with who votes on it. And, you know, like you said, until that process changes, it's, you know, it is what it is.
Yep. It is what it is. 2020, it has a slogan. It is what it is. That's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Hopefully next time Pete and I talk, we'll be getting ready to, basically watch the end of the Houston and OKC series to see who the Lakers are playing. But, you know, I'll be ready to go to record after tomorrow's game. So make sure you guys are tuned in for that. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.